Quick question for you. Is the door to your room shut?
Partly. Why?
Because I can hear you. I don't know if it's pickup
Oh, I just heard me in your mic. Yeah, I just heard me in your mic. Let me as I
Yeah. I'm in a separate room, but his voice
Yeah,
carries
it
when he
does.
talks
It
to
really does. I couldn't hear it though.
Yeah, I don't think it was too bad, but I didn't
Yeah.
know. He's also not talking that loud. Sometimes he talks really loud in the middle when he gets excited, so I was worried that would get
He's
picked
gonna
up.
yeah, so he's gonna get excited and then it's gonna be loud.
Yeah.
Whatever, y'all love that about me. He says
Yeah.
what?
No, I was going to say, I'm just the one who walks around the house while you record podcasts and hear random things being blurted out.
No one laughs at God in a hospital. No one laughs at God in a war. No one's laughing at God when they're starving or freezing or so very poor. No one laughs at God when a doctor calls after some routine tests. No one's laughing at God when it's gotten real late and their kid's not back from that party yet. No one laughs at God when their airplane starts to uncontrollably shake. No one's laughing at God when they see the one they love hand in hand with someone else and they hope that they're mistaken. No one laughs at God when the cops knock on their door and they say, "We got some bad news, sir." No one's laughing at God when there's a famine, fire, or flood.
All right, well, fuck it. Let's get started then, since we're
Yeah.
talking about it. All right, so we're back. It's Two Stonians. Joe is back from the Super Bowl. He's going to tell us a little bit about that.
Very little.
We are joined today by my wife Christina, who is here. We're going to talk about The Good Place, and we're going to talk about the Rockets trading Clint Capela for Robert Covington. But tell us about what was it? So you went to Vegas for the Super Bowl. Tell us about that a little bit, or whatever
Yes,
you're allowed to
sir.
tell us.
Yeah, so this was the second year we've done it. I went to Vegas with Roy,
Roy, friend of the pod.
friend of the pod,
You'll be
Roy.
here next week.
So we were there. So we flew in Friday. Roy flew out Monday, but I stupidly flew out Tuesday because it was like $300 cheaper on my flight. But really, after thinking about how much I gambled and then the $200 room I had to get, like I really didn't save the money. Like it really was just a waste. So I was there till Tuesday, but we watched the game at the Westgate Sportsbook, which is the
Okay.
biggest sports book in the world.
How was that?
It was cool. It was cool. So what we got was full open bar with our like VIP ticket. It's 1,000 people. Like it's 1,500 people here at this watch party. Some people are watching in the actual book, but we actually had a conference room with these giant televisions, full open bar, a waiter, and two buffets on the side of the conference. And
Okay.
so as soon as we get there, they say get there around 1 o'clock. So the game in Vegas time was at 3:30. So we got there right at 1 o'clock, hauled ass to our table, first two people at the table. So we got the best. It's a round table, so we actually managed to get the best view of the TV.
Oh,
Because we
nice.
got there so early. And then our table started filling up, and fucking coincidentally, our table was 90% Texans.
Oh,
So
right
there
on.
was a bunch of ladies from Lubbock and two dudes from Dallas. So they're
Oh,
all
nice.
Cowboys fans, but you know, I didn't hold that against them.
Yeah, no. People from Dallas, your friends when you're outside of Texas, but
Exactly.
you're like it's like when like two animals that are natural enemies in the wild are like friends in captivity.
Yeah. It was good. It was good. So we're watching the game, and so the arena we're in is split AFC side, NFC side. So
Okay.
we bought these tickets months ago. So we picked the AFC side because we were foolish enough to think the Texans might be there. Which is funny because the Texans were foolish enough to think they might be there too until Patrick Mahomes says, "Nah, son." So we're watching the game, and so we're surrounded by Chiefs fans. And you get to see them go through all the emotions. And there was one fight that happened maybe 5 minutes into the game. Because you were very surprised, because it's like I said, it's full open bar. So our waiter brought us a pitcher, and anytime my pitcher was halfway done, he had another pitcher ready to go.
Yeah, because you guys go gambling after
Oh yeah,
this.
and he knew anytime we did shots, he did shots with us. He was really cool.
Oh.
It was fun. I was like, "Fuck yeah, man, get your shot!" So as soon as the game was over, Chiefs win. all the Chiefs fans just start flipping tables. Just going fucking wild. Me and Roy are like, we gotta get the fuck out of here.
No, man, you should have been like, food fight!
And no, just, hell no.
Like, gun confit, or whatever they have on that buffet.
I have no desire to fuck with out-of-town police. So.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, fair enough.
While I'm out of town. So we went to the smoking area and just chilled out there till the crowd left.
Okay. We
just chilled outside. So, but yeah, that was my Super Bowl.
Wait. Is Vegas legal now?
Yes.
Can you smoke weed in the fucking casino?
Not in the casino, but in a designated smoking area. As long as you're not just blatant. Like, if you have, like, a vape pen, you're pretty good to go in the casino.
Yeah, Vegas will look the other way as long as you let them.
I mean, they want you to be as fucked up as possible. They want all your money.
Right.
Yeah, so, but yeah, that was Vegas. I broke even on slots according to MGM, because you can look up how much you gambled.
Okay.
I did pretty good on my sports bets. Didn't on the game. Like, if they wouldn't have scored that last touchdown, I wouldn't have won any money. The Chiefs. Like, I wouldn't have won anything if he hadn't have gotten that last little tacked on touchdown, which I'm sure every gambler in the world was going crazy when he fucking gave them the 10.5 cover. Because they were props for 10.5. I had the 4.5 prop, and he covered the 10.5 with that touchdown.
Nice.
So, but yeah, it was fun. It was fun. It was a way more entertaining game than last year, which I think helped.
Wasn't it last year like 9-6 or some shit?
Yeah, it was the Patriots and the Rams shit show.
That's right.
Yeah. But yeah, that was Super Bowl.
Right on. Well, welcome back.
Yeah, I'm back. At a cocktail party, we're listening to a cookout theme joke. Oh, when the crazy say he hates us and they get so red in the head, you think they're about to choke. God could be funny when told he'll give you money if you just pray the right way. And when presented like a genie with his magic like Houdini, or grand switches like Jiminy Cricket and Santa Claus. God could be so hilarious, ha ha.
Ha ha. So, Christina, like you, I don't want to say convened this, but you have been itching to talk about The Good Place. And
oh,
when
yeah.
I found out it was ending, I was like, let's wait for the finale. We'll have you on and we'll talk about it. So, you go ahead and you get it started. Like, about anything about it, how you started watching the show or what you loved about it. We can start with the finale. Anything goes. For our listeners, full spoilers from here on out. If you haven't seen The Good Place, fucking check
heavy
it out.
Spoiler warning, yeah.
I love The Good Place. It is, I don't even know how to describe it, but it's just this magical little show that you can watch that is simultaneously heartwarming and hilariously rude sometimes. I love it. But the finale, I mean, I don't know. What do you all, I'd love to hear your takes on the finale, but I was just crying during the entire finale. I feel like that's the worst place to start when you're talking about The Good Place, because everything I love about it, like, I love the way the show ended, but mm-hmm. Everything I love about the show, I feel like it's very different than what the finale actually was. In a lot of ways.
I get that. I love the finale, for one. Like, I thought it was the right way to go out for a show like this. I really enjoyed it. I love the show. I thought it was one of the better episodes, like, finale episodes that I've seen. It seemed really well put together. I was crying pretty much immediately, which I wasn't expecting. When I read the title of the episode, I knew what it was going to ultimately be about. It was going to be about them accepting, moving on to the next thing. I did not expect Jason to be the first one. And yeah. I did not expect Jason being the first one to be what would wreck me. Because Jason finding that piece first was like, oh God, this is really it. It's really over. Like, that's when it hit me. And I did not expect to feel that hard so early in the episode.
So... here's the thing with Jason, though. He's always like that, right? Like, he's kind of lurking behind the scenes. And there were three things that I loved about Jason in general, but in that episode in particular. So the first one is that he's the first one to go, because what he wants, or what he wanted out of life, was so simple. He just wanted to play a good game of Madden with his dad, and he gets it. And then it's like, he's good. And I think that's part of what was so amazingly devastating about Jason as a character in that episode.
Hold on. I gotta quickly correct one detail because that was super hilarious. He didn't say a good game of Madden. The perfect game of Madden. And the perfect game of Madden involved him beating his father like 500-0.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but that's Jason, right?
Yeah.
And the second thing that I loved about this episode is when Jason is ready to go, he doesn't actually go at all.
No!
However many Baramis becoming the monk that he was supposed to be from the very beginning. Like, it was just so perfect. And when Janet tells him that, he's like, what? Huh? Then he just goes.
His original torture, he sort of makes this loop back to what his torture was.
I have one. I love that arc. I loved it. I saw it when it was happening. I'm like, first of all, to go back to the sort of crying part, the only part they got through where I shed like a single tear. I don't love The Good Place like y'all do, though I do enjoy it quite a bit. You guys, it resonates emotionally with you guys in a way it never did with me, but I super love it. It's super funny, smartly written. I love Dan Gore and Michael Shore, like they're the best. But when Chidi gives the wave speech.
Oh, yeah.
First of all, that speech is amazing. That vision of the afterlife, it's obviously he's quoting a philosopher, right? I've encountered it before, you know, from anything from Eastern philosophy to the poetry of Walt Whitman, this idea that you just return your substance back to the universe, right? That we are just a temporary manifestation of a greater energy, right? This that all our matter cannot be created or destroyed. We are all recycled material, right? And back to the universe we will go. I've always preferred that vision of the afterlife. I've always loved it. But it was so perfectly stated, and it felt so earned, right? Yeah. Because Shore and Gore, they love that sort of epilogue episode. The narrative wrapped up the episode before. This is just aftermath, right?
Really, two episodes before, because, like, really, the Patty episode before this, the one before this, only sets up this finale.
Right.
Like, that's really all it's there for. Like, they get in a good place, and then it sets up this long goodbye.
That's true.
Yeah.
But then we find out that Jason has been chilling. So right when Chidi leaves, it's this huge emotional moment. Yeah. And I always say, you know, a well-written comedy when it can hit emotional notes, but the jokes don't stop, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's always been, like, the problem with the Apatow. Like, it's always jokes and then seriousness, and they don't neither. It makes the other feel cheap. It cheapens each other when they don't feel organically synthesized. But Jason coming back to break the tension, and he never left. Was so funny, but at the same time, I was like, you just made me say goodbye to Jason twice.
Yes.
And I'm not upset by it. Like, at this point.
No, I was happy to see him. I was happy he wasn't dead. Like, that whole thing. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
It was funny.
Well, I'll use that as a segue to get back to my third thing, because I said two things about Jason, but there were three things I loved about him in this episode. And, I mean, it's sort of related to what you said, but mostly you just said Jason's name, so I'm jumping back in. But the third thing I loved about Jason was that when he decided to leave, he was the first one to go, and he got to have this amazing goodbye. Like, I think the thing that's so devastating about death in a lot of ways is it, and that the characters expressed throughout the show, is that they didn't get to choose how or when they left Earth, or they never got to say goodbye to people, and they just didn't get a choice. And so now it's kind of the beauty of it. Like, you don't get to live forever, although I suppose you could in The Good Place if you wanted to, but you get introduced to this world where, like, people leave when they're ready on their own terms, and getting to do what they want to do and say what they want to say to the people around them they care about. And Jason had the ultimate version of that, because he went first and he had that huge party. And that was the other sort of, like, joyful thing that I loved about Jason's character, because his character, you know, had some serious moments, but I think it just brought so much levity and in such a fun way to the show.
Yeah, man, I fucking Jason. He's so great. And in the ways you just described, and that sort of double getting to go moments with him, but that whole language of, like, when you're ready, I've been really living with that recently. So that's the part that's sticking with me. Like, I think it's beautiful. Like, you can leave when you're ready, and you can leave on your own terms, right? Like, if death could be that way, none of us would fear it. We'd embrace it, right? It's just the next stage. It makes me think of, I don't, this is, I know this is random, but we're going in whatever direction. It makes me feel like, are you arguing for, like, euthanasia? Because I might be with you, because that's what euthanasia essentially is, right? Is you get to decide when you go.
I think, like most TV shows and movies and art, it's ultimately not about real life, but about art. Like, I think, like, really, he's, I think, I really think he's making a part, it's him saying goodbye to you as a creator of this show more than making a point about that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. This show is so meta-ethical that having a meta-finale fits perfectly.
Yes.
And I mean, I think you could take it to that point if you wanted to with regard to euthanasia, but I don't think that's the point at all. I think the bigger point of the show was that moment, like, what was it, a season ago? I can't keep track of what season it was in, where they realized it was not possible to get to the good place because of the conditions of the modern world, where the best of people who were trying their hardest were set up to fail. And I think that's the bigger point. And everything else is kind of the emotional fallout and the sort of, how do we build back up from that space? I mean, that's kind of a crazy point for a show that's like a 20-minute sitcom to be
made. I felt that way.
The key thing to me, like the mission statement to that, to the whole show to me, is what do we owe each other? And that's one of my favorite moments in the show, is when Michael asked that to Eleanor, because she doesn't really know who she is, and he pushes her to Chidi, who is always like, who is the most grounded thing. But like the whole show is just like, what do we owe each other as a society? Like the ultimate mission statement of the show is like, what do we owe each other? And I also liked in the finale, we got to see so many of the characters in their real lives that we had met along the way. Like, they all earned their spaces. They all earned their place in the good place. And they all sort of found some peace in, like, in the afterlife. I thought that was a nice little touch, too. We get to see Chidi's friends. We get to see Eleanor's shitty friends. Like, they found a way to make it. And the D-bag guy, I can't remember his name, but the guy from the first half of the season, he still hasn't made it. He's still working through it.
Yeah, he has that moment where he's like, but I told them they look nicer when they smile. Like,
everybody's made it but him. In all these barriers.
I like that. Well, two things about what you said. One, I never realized how much I needed chaotic evil Kristen Bell in my life. Like, her fucking Arizona trash was one of the funniest bits. Like, I was actually like, because see, it's what I think, one of the things that's brilliant about this show, and I'm going to build this back to Eleanor, is that we all have different takeaways. My takeaway is either one of those, although when you were saying, I'm like, oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, that's definitely like a huge part of the show, right? Yeah. But for me, it's like, no, you can be a better person. Mm-hmm. It's just a real fucking existential pain in the ass. And most people would rather believe that you can't get better to excuse yourself from having to. But if you commit to it, you really can. Like, you can get better. And, you know, the role of, say, studying in class and all that stuff is ultimately just an opportunity for reflection, right? But at the end of the day, it's what we owe each other.
Yeah.
And can we navigate a world full of landmines that, like, regardless of whether or not we've been set up to fail, it's a world we built, right? So it's our fault that it's like that. Yeah. But we can get better. Like, if you really commit to it, you can get better. You can be better. And by you being better, the people around you will get better. They will return, make you better. And then that's how goodness spreads, right? And Eleanor becoming better made me sad because I love the shitty Eleanor so much.
Yeah.
I feel like all the four of them are like archetypes, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's almost like with friends, you can, like, are you a Rachel or are you a Phoebe? Like, I want to treat the four humans that way. Like, are you a self-congratulatory but ultimately self-absorbed narcissist? Are you a sociopathic, you know, Arizona trash? Are you so carefree that you don't see that you're hurting others and yourself? Or are you so indecisive that you're letting people down? Like, those as archetypes, I thought, were really cool. And I'm going to admit, I really identified with Kristen Bell's archetype because I feel like that was my 20s.
You were a dirtbag. You were Arizona trash.
I was fucking dirtbag. I just didn't give a shit. I don't care if you're upset. Like, no, I get it. What's the one where she's in the, where she's working for the call center? And she's like, no, I get it. scare old people into being afraid of allergies and sell them some snake oil. It's fine. You don't have to trick me. Just where's the list? Yeah. You know, like, I'm on board. Like, I don't care. Like, that was me in my 20s. So yeah. I don't know. Do you guys agree? Do you think we could treat them like archetypes? And if so, which one would you see as yourself, as the worst version of you? Because Kristen Bell, I would see as the worst version.
I see a cheaty, like my indecisiveness, like cheaty all the way.
I love the idea of them as archetypes, but I don't feel like I fit into any of them. Mm-hmm. So I feel like they're, I mean, does Michael count as one?
I was going to say, where do Michael and Janet fit?
Janet feels not fully formed, but I feel
I'm gonna
like
argue,
has to be one.
Yeah. I'm going to argue for Christine, for you both being cheaty. Because there's a cheaty moment, I'm like, oh my god, that's exactly my wife. And that's where cheaty says, I missed my mother's, what did he say? I missed my mother's, I was watching favorite moments, version for this. I missed my mother's surgery because I promised my landlord's neighbor's son I'd help him learn how to use his new phone.
That made you think of me?
That what happened to you. Like, I can't, but I promised. I said I'd do this thing. Like, that reminded me of you so much.
Oh, wow. So, okay, I'm switching gears a little bit. So, when did you guys start watching? Did you start from the very beginning, or did you jump in the middle?
No, we started watching in the very beginning. There was only, like, one season. Maybe there was a half season out. Yeah, only a half season out. Someone told me about it. I binge watched it while he was doing something in the house at one point, like when it first came out. And then I told him he had to watch it with me. Couldn't explain why, because I'd watch it up to the part where it was like one of the first half of that first season was they thought they were in the good place, but then Kristen Bell revealed that they weren't. Yeah. And so I was sitting on that like, no, keep watching it. No, keep watching it, because he was like, I don't know about this.
That's how I felt the whole first season. The whole first season, I'm like, I don't know about this. I don't know if this is really it. And then the twist happens, and it's like, okay. Yeah. And then Michael does the fucking greatest smile I've ever seen in television history.
Yeah.
It's just pure evil.
Yeah, that was great. Oh, my God. Fucking Ted Danson was a goddamn revelation.
The whole show, yeah.
One day we got to talk about, like, the Mount Rushmore of just television comedy actors. Just the actors, not the characters.
Yeah,
He's got to be on it.
Yeah.
But I'll say this, yeah, because she watched the first season, she's like, you got to watch it. And another friend of mine was like, you got to watch it, but you got to get through the first season.
Yeah.
And I was like, and then I actually had the thought some point in the first season, I was like, is this hell?
Yeah.
That would explain why everyone's making me wait to the first season.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, so this the twist was, it felt obvious to me, but I was also on the lookout for a twist, you know? And I don't usually watch things that way. I resist that. Like, with a mystery movie, I don't try to figure it out. If I know it's an M. Night Shyamalan movie, I don't try to see the clues, even though most of the time there aren't any clues anyway. But this time I did. But it didn't make it any less funny. I had the sort of pleasure of being like, yeah, I think I'm right. And then I was right. But were you guys shocked by it? Like, I wasn't, but I was like, it was tipped off to me.
I was waiting for it. And I expected it. Like watching it, I'm like, okay, they have to be in the bad place. And then when it happened, they pulled it off so well, like the way it's presented in the show, I still enjoyed it so much, even though I kind of knew it was coming.
I didn't see it coming at all, because I never see anything coming. I'm that person who, like, the shocking twist happens in the movie at, you know, in the movie theater, I, like, gasp out loud. I was just like, what?
Yeah.
And then I had to sit on it, and I'm so bad at keeping secrets. Like, when I buy Jorge a Christmas present, like, I tell him I bought it, and then I tell him I can't tell him what it is, but usually I tell him what it is even before it comes in, or I give him presents 2 weeks before Christmas. So, like, watching this show, I didn't tell him what the twist was, but I'm sure that just by virtue of watching it in the vicinity of me, that probably gave away the fact that there was this.
Yeah, you do watch something like, something's coming. Something big's coming. Keep going.
It's about to happen.
Yeah, you're looking at me like, here it comes. And I'm like, okay, all right, cool, man.
Oh, but see, like, but the twist, that twist set up what I think is the best run of the show, which is season 2, where it's Michael rebooting them so many goddamn times. Because that's when I was like, oh, this show is like, this is like nothing I've ever seen. Like, I've never seen a show just like, they get to comment on how sitcoms get to reboot every week. Like, they get to make a joke about that.
Oh, then I didn't even think about that.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's a, yeah, they get to make a joke about how that works. But they also just get to fucking change the status quo as quickly as possible, which was my favorite thing about this show. Is like, four episode arcs where it's like, holy shit, what's gonna happen next? What's gonna happen next?
Yeah,
I hadn't felt like that in a show since Lost. It actually reminds me of Lost like the most since Lost.
I actually agree with that. I had that same thought, especially when they're doing the back and forth between Earth and the Good Place stuff. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking like, especially in the first season with all the ethics stuff, I was like, yeah, because I knew some of that stuff. They definitely went way deeper than I knew, but like I know, like if, when you do what we do, you end up finding out who Kant is, John Locke. These are like, you know, people that they tell me I need to know, right? Yeah. So I thought like, oh, this is cute. This is going to be like philosophy 101 class. But then it started getting pretty into it and having jokes with it, like the trolley. The trolley is so funny when Chidi fucking kills all the postmen. Yeah. This shit was so funny, or the workers or whatever. But then I thought, like, no, you're not pulling your punches. Like, you're going for it. And what I found out is one of the philosophers that, quote, Todd May was the consultant for the show. So he was making sure the philosophy was on track.
Yeah.
And then when they started doing all the reboots and it got real weird, I'm like, this is sort of, like, narratively challenging. This is, like, something for a sitcom. I was, like, impressed that it was even on the air. I was impressed that it had an audience.
Oh, like, yeah, that's the most surprising thing, is that it lasted this long, because really NBC told Sure, we will do literally whatever you want. That's the only way something this ridiculous gets made, and I'm very thankful they gave him a blank check.
I mean, I feel like even though it feels like it's about something ridiculous or the plot is ridiculous, I don't know what the numbers are and who watched this or not, but I feel like I know a lot of people from a lot of different backgrounds who love this show, because I think it had that piece that was the sort of philosophical deep dive, to the degree that you can say it did that, but that was always so firmly rooted in Chidi's character that it never became overwhelming. So like, people who weren't necessarily interested in that piece of it, I think, could latch on to other pieces of it. Like, you could have just watched this as a straight up sitcom, because Jason's ridiculous, yeah, and Eleanor has her lines, and Tahani has her little persona, right? But then you could really think about these deeper questions. And I feel like in the current moment we're in, like politically and otherwise, this is just in a lot of ways a really heartfelt show that looks at big questions in a way that feels divorced entirely from the current moment in politics. It's kind of escapist, but you're not escaping because you have to think about big questions. Like, I feel like I knew a lot of people who really like this show. Again, I have no numbers on this, but I am just assuming because people I talk to like it.
And it's full of archetypes too, right? Like the fucking guy that you were talking about earlier, the white privileged character. Yeah. Like, sure, it's divorcing us from like the contemporary manifestation of politics, but it's still having to ask not just big abstract questions, but like big questions about our current society. But I think you nailed it when you said that it was like this philosophical show that is still heartfelt, because the thing that impressed me is how well realized the characters were, despite being archetypes. In particular, I'm always impressed by any show that can really make me give a shit about a character. Like, or no, have an emotional reaction to a character. Not giving a shit is one of them. But having an emotional reaction to a character, even if that emotional reaction is negative, I'm impressed that you made me invest enough. And for the first 2.5 seasons, I fucking hated Chidi. I hated
really?
Him. I mean, he made me laugh, but I was just like, first of all, you gotta understand, I identified immediately with Eleanor Shellstrop. Like, I was that was me in that world. And Chidi was just, for the reasons we're supposed to hate Chidi, and I realized, like, yeah, I'm reacting the way you're telling me to react, right? Like, yeah, fucking make a choice, Chidi. Like, I get so mad, and I know that that's the point, that that's the gag, and I'd get so invested in Chidi pissing me off that I was like impressed with them that they could write a show and command my emotions that way, because that's how they want me to feel, right?
Yeah.
That's so interesting, because on the one hand, I loved all the characters because I loved watching them. But on the other hand, I didn't love a character. Like, you know, when you watch a show and there's one character you kind of connect to and you kind of root for that one maybe more than the others. And sometimes it's scripted in the way that kind of forces you to do that. But sometimes you just kind of pick a character you like better than the other ones. But I didn't have that with this one. I didn't feel this strong, deep connection to any of the characters. What I felt connected to was like the quest they were on. Yeah, like, I was so invested in that quest, and I liked the characters because of it. It wasn't the other way around. And maybe it's just because I feel like I was losing my way with, like, I used to be super Catholic and, you know, interreligion, and I have not been in the last several years. So maybe it was just the idea of what they were grappling with that was so interesting to me. But I felt like just the premise and the stuff they were doing, just the pure plot of the show, was so much more interesting than anything else I was watching on TV at the time. That drew me in.
I love the way you said that, and particularly the individual quests of the individual characters too. Like, right? Like, we already talked about how Jason completes his destiny and becomes the monk at the end. And I love how Chidi finally gets to leave at peace, because the man who didn't want to make a choice has now been alive so long that has made every choice.
He created the new afterlife.
Right. Like. Yeah, he's made every choice. So by the end, yes, he's reached his nirvana, right? He doesn't have to make a choice because there's no more choices to make.
Oh, God. Yeah.
It's so well put together. I'm so impressed by the show.
Yeah, and Eleanor letting Chidi go because she knows, like, she the moral dilemma of it. She has to let him go because to keep him is wrong is the full circle for Eleanor, too. But it's not enough, so she still tries to save Mindy St. Clair. She still tries to... She gives Michael his ultimate wish, right. And she tries to save... Like, you know, she just still tries. You know, she never gives up. And then, so she goes away, and then... What did you think of the last line of the show?
Oh, what was the last line? I don't remember.
Keep it sleazy?
Yeah.
That's right.
That's right.
I thought it was great. Because it was that perfect sort of, like... that, like, sentimental but also kind of funny line, because the guy that Michael says it to, the only reason Michael has the opportunity to say that line is because that little, like, pixie dust or whatever that was that is meant to represent Eleanor passing on has, like, hit this guy who was going to be shitty and not return the mail. But then he has this moment where he's like, maybe I'll return it. And so it's this, like, little bit of good trickling down into the world. But then Michael uses it as an opportunity to sort of just say... take it sleazy or keep it sleazy or whatever.
Something
but
like
yeah.
That, yeah.
No, but that's a perfect, like, it reminds me so much about this show is that moment. That idea hadn't occurred to me. My thought was that my particles would just return to the universe, right? Thanks for letting me be here. Here's all my shit back. But that those little particles that, like, if you're a good person, the goodness sort of remains, that you can't change the particle. You can't destroy or create matter, but maybe you can alter it, right? And then that little speck of Eleanor made that guy better. I was like, oh, what a nice thought. It was just a nice little nugget to end on. But there's always time for a joke. And then here comes Michael, like, keep it sleazy, motherfuckers. I was like, oh, I love you right now, show. That's so good.
Yeah.
I wish he'd thrown us, like, a shirt balls or a mother forker at the end just to add on. but it's cool without it. It still works.
In the real world.
Yeah, I do
like the thing, like, the ambiguity left, because, like, she says, like, Sean can take over, like, all these things. We don't know what's going to happen now, but they leave it open. Like, Michael's alive. Michael will die. Michael will go through the system, and we don't get to be there. It's like we were talking about with Watchmen. Like, now it just gets to live on in our heads.
Right. Man, hold on, because you brought him up. Low-key MVP fucking Sean.
Sean, oh, yeah.
So fucking funny. He had two tortures that I still remember. One was the butthole spiders, like, we're making them bigger, like, so that's what he said, and then the penis flattening. Yeah. This is so fucking funny. I wish I had a just list of the Good Place tortures. I'm going to see if I can find them.
But also another amazing character who we have not talked about is the judge.
Yes, Maya Rudolph. Oh, my God.
When the judge is all horned up for fucking Chidi, that shit was so funny.
Yes. Yes, and Timothy Olyphant, because that was I love Justified, and it was great to see him sort of inhabit that character again, even though it wasn't really that character, but it was great to see Timothy Olyphant in that show, and just the judge, like, she was so good, Maya Rudolph, like, she was
the perfect person to play that character. She's so good in that show.
Yeah.
Everybody's good. Like, I like the little Nick Offerman cameo. Like, just well done. And it's clearly he's not Ron Swanson. That's Nick Offerman.
Oh, dude, did you guys? But it's there's tons of people I've been looking online. There's a bunch of Easter eggs that suggest that Parks and Rec and Good Place are a shared universe.
Have to be. I would assume all.
There's references to Ron Swanson. There's references to John Raffio. There's a whole bunch.
Yeah.
Ooh, so sorry. But the idea that those wouldn't you love for Editor Shellstrop to meet fucking Aziz's character?
Tom
Haverford. Haverford.
Yeah.
All right, so here's, I pulled up the list. I'm just going to read this quickly.
Okay.
The Tortures. Somebody just wrote, like, a top 10. I'm just going to read a couple good ones. An Endless New Yorker subscription. Michael said, you and I both know I'll never read those. And Sean says, of course you won't, but they'll just keep coming. Penis Fattlers. Butthole Spiders. Bees with Teeth. Hot Dog. The Hot Dog Torture Chamber. Is that like shoving them into the throats of vegans? And Michael says, yeah, throats. He tortured William Shakespeare by describing the plot of Entourage. A bear with two mouths. Turning a human inside out with their butt. And partial decapitation. Oh, man. That's so good. This show is something else, man. I'm so impressed with it. I'm so impressed with it by how, just like you said, how well structured and how well written is. That send off, like, I could nitpick it. There's a few moments where, like, there's a few moments I honestly thought, like, do you not know where you're going? But now I realize, no, you did. You might have been having to fill a 13 episode order, but clearly you knew the destination. And I was just impressed with the, how can I say it, like, the completeness of the vision.
I've read interviews with him where he talks about, like, he had thought about this. He had mapped this show out when he was making it, and even talked to Damon Lindelof about what not to do in certain situations, like how to, like, lead the audience without, like, digging himself too big of a piece of a hole. So it was really, like, he really did a lot of work on this. Like, this, you could tell, like, this guy was able to do whatever he wanted, and he was able to put together something really beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, the only thing I was on the fence about and in the finale itself was Tahani and her getting to sort of just hang on forever and be one of the architects. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, I liked it because it was different and, like, what else was her character really going to do? But on the other hand, I was kind of like,
They've never really known what to do with Tahani.
Yeah.
Tahani's like the one thing where it feels like she never really got enough.
Well, I'm gonna beg to differ. I'm gonna beg to differ. I think that, first of all, I like that it broke up the narrative because it would have gotten to an easy formula, right? Like, every 10 minutes we say our goodbye, every 10 minutes we say our goodbye, every 10 minutes we say our goodbye, and then we never say goodbye to Tahani. She's like, nah, I'm gonna just chill and do something else. And she lived the life of, like, false altruism, right? Ultimately just for attention, right? And at the end, she's an architect. She'll be unseen. She will never get credit for the work she does, right? Other than perhaps the people in her immediate vicinity who are doing the same work. So I actually thought it was a nice... I agree that sometimes they didn't feel like they knew what to do with her. They shoved her into that awkward love triangle at the beginning with Jason.
Yeah,
they
tried. Mm-hmm.
That's what I was like. You know where you're going, so you feel like you're treading water. That was one of those moments. So I agree with the idea that they sometimes didn't know what to do with her.
Yeah.
Because her and Michael have very similar arcs, you know? Mm-hmm. But I also think that her narrative came together nicely. I thought that was a great finale for her.
Yeah, she got a happy ending. Her parents admitted they were wrong. She had a great relationship with her sister. She found purpose in her life, and then she found a new purpose when she was ready for her life to end. Like, she got a great arc. I just think overall, she got kind of sidetracked after... Really, after season two, they didn't really use her as much. I think because they had, like, ran out of story for her. Other than, like, her reconciling with her sister. After that, there's not really much that they could use her for. So they didn't really focus on her a lot. And I know it's a lot. They have six characters to, like, six major characters. Yeah,
she kind of becomes the straight man for a while.
Yeah, she's more Eleanor's best friend than her own character after a certain point.
Yeah, she's kind of, to me, she's got a couple of episodes where she kind of stands out and has narrative, especially when you see what happened with her sister. But mostly she, to me, is there for those, like, one-liners where she says something outrageous that in, you know,
she name drops. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we were watching clips right before we were going to record. And one of them was, one of them was when she said that she was there for the moment her friend Taylor, was picked on by her other friend Kanye, who was defending her best friend Beyonce. And that's just like the classic.
Or the one where she goes, she's like, what if I paraphrase a song? She's talking to the judge. What if I paraphrase a song written by my godfather? Maybe you've heard of it. Hey, judge, don't make it bad. Take the good place and make it better. Like, that's so funny. That's so fucking funny. She was always good for those, so she was good to have around for that. Because she's great. Her one-liners, I think, man, I don't know. Ah, who has the better one-liners, her or Eleanor? Because Eleanor has some amazing ones, too.
Yeah, Eleanor. That's tough. That's tough. Probably, that's tough to pick. That's what I like when they put them together. Like, they kept them together. She would, and Eleanor would always objectify Tahani because Tahani's hot.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Oh, man. That show took me to a good place.
It did. I did not expect to like that show. Because I saw the trailers for that show before it came on. I'm like, what the fuck is this? And I was never going to watch it. And it is one of my favorite TV shows of all time.
And you know what? This was I watched it a little bit distant. I was like, because you bring up Lost so many times. And I've had that feeling like I've been burned before on these like paradigm shattering shows. And I was just like, watching it a little guarded, even through the end, honestly, even through the end, and enjoying it, like committed to seeing it, because I really wanted them to stick the landing. I really wanted them to, but I was just so guarded because I didn't want to be disappointed. I'm realizing now, like in retrospect, I was sort of guarded. I was not like consciously guarded. But then when Chidi gives that wave speech, I just melted. And I was like, you win, show. You totally win. Because that moment felt so fucking earned, you know?
I just, the last thing I'll say about the finale is that I loved this show. I love this finale. And I don't know. I just feel like it was just such a hopeful, beautiful vision of how things could be or how we could conceive of things. I loved all the second chances. I loved that people got to mess up and try again. And I loved that that was intentionally structured that way. Yeah. And it just made me, I don't know, it just made me feel better about life. Like, if there's a religion called the Good Place religion, I will join it because I like this show so much. Sees a pair of hateful eyes. No one's laughing at God when they're saying their goodbyes. But God could be funny at a cocktail party while listening to a cookout theme joke. Or when the crazy say he hates us and they get so red in the head, you think they're about to choke. When told to give you money if you just pray the right way, and when presented like a genie who does magic like Houdini, or grants wishes like Jiminy Cricket and Santa Claus, God could be so hilarious. But no one laughs at God in a hospital. No one laughs at God in a war. So very poor. No one's laughing at God. No one's laughing at God. No one's laughing at God. We're all laughing with.